History is perhaps the most crowded location there is. Since it's packed with people and events, it's inevitable that some will be overlooked with the risk of becoming lost. Fortunately, my next guest with her new book, which has already been optioned for and is in production to be a film as well, has ensured that the women she writes about will never be part of any lost history. When you consider their roles as part of the pioneering days of space travel and the times of society, when they played their roles, their accomplishments certainly deserve a permanent place of honor. Their stories are told in the book, Hidden Figures, The American Dream, and The Untold Story of the Black Women, Mathematicians Who Helped Win the Space Race, written by Margot Lee Shetterly. Thanks for being here today, Margot.
Morning, Chris. How are you?
Fantastic job with the book. Let me give you listening a couple of websites for the book, HiddenFigures.com, as well as MargotLeeShetterly.com. How did you come across the stories of Dorothy Vaughan, Mary Jackson, Katherine Johnson, and Christine Darden?
Well, Chris, I grew up in Hampton, Virginia. That's where I am right now. My dad worked at the NASA Langley Research Center here in Hampton. He's a now retired research scientist. And so I grew up in a community where a lot of people worked at NASA. And in that group of people were included, you know, African-Americans like my dad, like these women, women of all backgrounds, in fact, so many women who were working here as mathematicians. So, you know, I grew up and didn't really give a second thought to the idea that anyone could be a scientist. You know, that those people were very much represented for me here. And, you know, it really took an outside eye. In this case, it was my husband, Aaron Shetterly, who on one telling, my dad's telling of some of the stories of some of the women that he'd worked with, was just like, wow, you know, this is incredible. Nobody knows this story. Or I certainly didn't know the story, he was saying, and people should, you know. And it, for me, it was a real moment of like, wow, we grew up with something special here, it really does need to be told to a larger audience.
And when you think of it, they weren't called mathematicians in their position. They were called computers, human computers, obviously, because of their mathematics skills. They were teachers. They were educators. They were intelligent people. What were some of the tasks and the projects that they took on?
Yep, so exactly. They were computers back when a computer was a person. It was a job title, somebody who spent their day doing math. In the early days, what they did was do a lot of the raw computations for the testing of airplanes. So whether an airplane was tested in a wind tunnel, you know, to make sure it was more efficient, that it didn't have any problems, that it would fly safely. Sometimes they would put instruments on an actual plane and fly it, sometimes fly it in, you know, in a way designed to sort of root out the weak spots, which is very dangerous. And all of the numbers, you know, from those instruments, those would be processed by the women. So during World War II, the airplane is really, you know, becoming one of the most important factors in the war. And, you know, after that, it became this huge, you know, mode of transportation, just more and more broad. The work that those women did was directly related to making airplanes more efficient, faster, and safer. Of course, during the space race, they used those same analytical skills to do things like calculating trajectories for, you know, the early Mercury astronauts. And a lot of that early work was still being done by hand. You know, later electronic computers took over those tasks, and, you know, we see where we are today, where just about every aspect of our life is automated and regulated by computer. But back in those early days, those women and their mathematical talents were a critical part of making sure those missions sent the man into space safely and brought him home just as safely.
The Margot's book, Hidden Figures, it takes you through that timeline of ensuring victory in the time of World War II through the breaking of the sound barrier into the formative days of NASA. We're talking with Margot Lee Shetterly, her book, Hidden Figures, HiddenFigures.com, MargotLeeShetterly.com, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. As they got out of the airplane aspect of their job into the breaking of the sound barrier and the various projects that led to satellites and NASA, was the work, were these projects things that they had they could reference back to something else, or were they writing new books with the projects and the calculations that they were doing technically?
Well, you know, a lot of it really built on the early work. You know, so if you imagine, you know, you've got an airplane that's flying slower than the speed of sound, you know, you kind of continue that out, you know, through and then past the speed of sound. Obviously, there, you know, there are some different physics that apply to all of those different endeavors. But, you know, a lot of the work did build on itself. But, you know, one thing that's really interesting is when, you know, I spent a lot of time interviewing Katherine Johnson, the human computer who received the Medal of Freedom last year from President Barack Obama. And, you know, a lot of times when I interviewed her, she'd tell me how she and the guys that she worked with wrote the textbook of space. At first I thought it was just a figure of speech, meaning, you know, we were there at the beginning and, you know, we were the smart people who figured it all out. She did mean that, but she literally meant that they had created a document, basically gone back to the drawing board, you know, found whatever kind of textbooks that did exist at the time on celestial mechanics and things like that. And then they gave a series of lectures to each other there at the Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, coming up with those original concepts, those concepts, the building blocks of what they would need to send a satellite and then a human into space. So there was, you know, in addition to sort of building on some of the fundamental concepts, they really did have to get there and roll up their sleeves and say, hey, man, we're in uncharted territory. How are we going to do this? And get the smartest people around in the room. And, you know, Katherine Johnson became one of those people. And, you know, figure out how they were going to accomplish that task.
And when you take all that into consideration, how these are women of achievements and accomplishments in this little piece of the world, and when you take the camera lens out to a wider view into the whole world of the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, those achievements and accomplishments were not attainable outside of Langley for these women. Because of the social structure of Jim Crow laws, segregation still around, and civil rights laws had, by the 50s and 60s, had just come into play, but the real world versus professional world were two very different worlds for these women.
That's very true. You know, this was a time when they would have had to ride in the back of the bus, you know, sit in separate train cars, many restaurants, for example, they wouldn't have been able to eat at. And so, you know, Langley really was this sort of unusual kind of social laboratory, even as it was an aeronautical laboratory. And so it was, you know, in the segregated South, at the same time, it was a federal laboratory, and some of the federal fair employment laws applied. A lot of the people who worked there were from the Midwest. They were from the North, places that did not have that tradition of Jim Crow segregation. So it really made for a very unusual place. And I think, you know, that at such an unusual place, certainly is the natural place for such an unusual story to occur.
Indeed. Just to wrap things up, 30 seconds or so, did these women look back at their careers as, well, that was the job that I was supposed to do, or do they appreciate and have pride in the magnitude of what they did?
You know, even today when you ask them, they loved their jobs. They were very good at their jobs. They loved the people they worked with. They loved being a part of NASA. But there was still a lot of that, you know, I was just doing my job, humility, that I think a lot of that World War II and, you know, 1940s, 50s generation has. And I think that's another reason why we haven't heard the story. They accepted their duty, they did it well, and they did it with humility.
And Margaret Lee Shetterly tells their story with the respect and the honor it does deserve, and rescues an important part of our history, not just in the world of math and aeronautics, but also in our country and who we were versus who we are. And wrong decisions would have let a lot of who we could have been fall to the wayside. But fortunately, these women had their desires, had their goals, had their needs and necessities all come through in the story of Hidden Figures, which you can learn more about at HiddenFigures.com, MargaretLeeShetterly.com, and get the book, because when you see the movie, when that comes out, it will just add to the excitement and the thrill of the written history becoming the visual history, and your appreciation for all of this history will be made even greater. Margaret Lee Shetterly, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Chris.